This is Joe Farinaccio from OutRigMedia.com and SmallTrimarans.com, and I have Jim Brown on the phone with me today. How are you doing, Jim?
Good morning, Joe.
Hey, I know that you've been down to Cedar Key, down in Florida, for the small boat gathering down there, and I heard you picked up some news while you were down there as well. So, great to hear from you. I'm looking forward to having you share with us today.
Okay, let me explain that the Cedar Key small boat event is something that I've probably spoken of before on the podcast, but it's the ultimate boat nut schmooze, you know, about 120 people get together, now starting twice a year at a little sleepy little resort on the west coast of Florida, straight west of Gainesville. And I've been going to this thing for 10 or 12 years, and this event last weekend was their 33rd event, consecutive small boat gathering at Cedar Key.
Wow.
And normally, yeah, that's really something, you know, for it to last that long. So there's got to be something going for it. What it mainly is a lot of information gets exchanged. There are no races, no regatta, no events, no protest meetings. It's just a schmooze. And there's an island offshore about a half a mile out from the town beach, and it has a nice sandy beach on it. And what usually happens is Friday and Saturday, everybody who brings a trailerable boat launches it and sails over to the island, and they all line up as sort of a grand display, and the people walk up and down the line looking at everybody else's boat and have a chance to try them out. If anyone wants to sail this one or that one, they get the chance.
Oh, that's neat.
And it really is a nice event. And this year we had altogether six wind riders. There were four of the 17s, one of the 16s, and one of the 10s. The wind rider 10 is a rare beast, and I think it's just a wonderful, lot of fun thing to sail. It's a little bitty boat that makes you laugh all the way, and so I had a good time sailing that one around for a while. And in the exchange of information that goes on out there, I met a guy who, my friend Andy Zimmerman introduced me to this guy who has been a long-time paddle sports sales agent in New Zealand. And he told me something that just knocked my socks off, Joe. He said that he knows of a guy who sailed from New Zealand to Thailand in a 17-foot wind rider.
Wow.
Now, what that requires is that, first of all, you've got to cross the Tasman Sea. It's in the Roaring Forties, south of Australia, you know?
Yeah.
Then you have to get by Australia, which is huge, and then cross the approaches to that Torres Strait there, which is infamous water, in order to get up to Thailand. Now, I don't have real confirmation on this yet. I haven't spoken with the guy. All I've spoken with is his friend, this agent, but Andy tells me that he's reliable, that I should believe this. And so I'm going to try to trace it down. Most of the Cedar Key activity does not pertain to seafaring, you know, which is supposed to be our focus here. But if this guy has sailed a 16-foot open boat that far in those waters, it's noteworthy. You know, it's something that we really should know about. And so I'm going to try to dig out the facts. I'll bring them to you when I can, and I've got the contact, and we'll see what happens there.
Oh,
but If you can imagine, you know, normally the water between Tasmania and New Zealand is dreaded by cruising sailors. It's one of those things where you anchor at Hobart, Tasmania, and wait for a while, following the weather carefully, get the best advice you can on your radio about what's going on to the south and down in New Zealand, and make a run for it. I can't remember how far the crossing is, but it's a big, serious ocean crossing, and in that water that's, you know, it's south of 40 degrees south. It's in right. the roaring 40s. I'm sure if you chose the season properly, and this guy apparently really knew what he was doing, I suppose he could get across there without incident. But you're bound to have waves coming up out of what they call the Great Southern Ocean, which is south of latitude 50 degrees south. You're bound to have something of the wave train that races around the world in the very southern end of the planet down there. And so he had to have, at times, been sailing in really big greenies, as we call them.
Yeah.
And I'm just amazed. I have 1,000 questions to ask him, and I'm hoping very much we can get him on the phone for the podcast. We'll try to get him on Skype if I can find out where he is and who he is and where he is and all that stuff.
Yeah.
And I'm not going to mention any names now because I don't know for sure that this really happened, but I've got a warm feeling for the source. You know, I think Andy knows this guy, and he has sold his kayaks in Australia and New Zealand through this guy for years. And so I think we're onto something here, Joe.
Yeah, that's really neat. I've listened to stories from other podcasts over the years, stories of people who have sailed in that area, and some of the stories, these were people in regular cruising boats, of course, and some of their stories are pretty amazing of, you know, having to face and overcome some of the obstacles of seafaring in that area.
Yeah, one of my early clients in a 38-foot design I called Off Soundings before Sea Runners was a retired commander in the Navy named Ed Sullivan, and he sailed his 38-footer from Japan down around New Zealand. Circumnavigated New Zealand, and altogether sailed his boat something over 60,000 miles over several years, running around in the South Pacific. And he said that on his crossing to New Zealand, he was caught in serious weather, and that a big wave overwhelmed the boat from the port side and slammed it edgewise down into the trough so that it had water coming at it from both sides. Very often in really angry seas, the damage to a boat is on the lee side or the down wave side of the vessel. It gets slammed down onto the floor of the wave that's trying to overwhelm it from the other side.
Mm-hmm.
And Sully said that he went by Sully. He said that he had four cabin side windows burst in at once on both sides of the vessel at once.
Wow!
And the water came with such force that later on he was fishing around after they got the boat back under control. He was reaching in a drawer somewhere, and he found that the drawer was full of water that had been blasted in there through the finger hole that was used to open the drawer.
Oh, wow.
So you can imagine what it was like down in the cabin after that. Sully sailed with a Japanese crewman for years, a guy named Norio, and Norio managed to go out and dive into one of the floats and retrieve the plywood covers for the cabin windows. In the plans, I suggested that the boat carry plywood storm covers for the windows. Sully got them out. I'm not Sully, but Norio got them out and nailed them over the openings, and thereby prevented further down flooding so that they could bail out and continue their trip.
Wow.
So the water can be very challenging. Now, to make it, if you get through water like that at a 16-footer, who knows really whether it's safer in a 38-footer or an 83-footer than it is in a 16-footer. Some people say the smaller the boat, the safer it is. But, of course, really get knocked around by every wave in a little boat.
Right.
And we need to know what he did to keep water out. That is, using the Windrider hatch cover over the main hatch, the midship's hatch would be obligatory. But if he was steering from the usual cockpit back in the stern, he would have to be wearing a skirt or have some kind of very robust way to seal off the kayak like cockpit opening there in order to keep water out of the boat, because there's probably a little doubt that he was inundated at least at times.
Right.
And who knows, maybe he had the worst weather somewhere else, who knows, but this is an epic voyage, and I want to find out about it.
Yeah, well, that's a pretty amazing story. Is there any other, before we let you go, are there any boats that stood out to you? Any other really interesting things you saw or heard down there at Cedar Key?
Well, there were several owner-built, owner-designed trimarans, little ones, trailerable boats, one of which I had seen before. And I really just think it's wonderful when somebody will decide that he's going to design and build his own boat. That's taking the whole trip, you know.
Yeah.
Especially if you really, really use it. And I have a friend who comes to the Cedar Key Gathering quite often. His name is Wes White. And his father, Rob White, is a famous designer and builder from that area of the west coast of Florida. And Rob White is no longer living, but his son is carrying the legacy. And I noticed that he had brought a very beautiful little monohull. Well, not so little. I think it was probably about 12 feet long, and extremely lightweight lap construction plywood. And it had a shape that looked to me like it would be impossible to achieve with plywood. But Wes said, yeah, my dad built this boat, and he took me through the whole thing piece by piece, and it described the construction method, because Wes, as a kid, had helped his dad build this boat.
Wow.
And the method, I mean, it was just very inventive ways of utilizing wood and epoxy. So on Saturday night of this event, we have a gathering of the whole clan in the local community center. Andy fronts the money for a caterer to bring dinner for everyone, and we had a presentation by Mike McGarry, who is the inheritor of all of the sailing hydrofoil work that was done by Sam Bradfield, together with Mike and their other associate, a guy named Tom Heyman, over a period of almost 40 years. Sam Bradfield devised a sail-powered hydrofoiling vessel that was very close to what we're using today. Indeed, the Rave, the hydrofoil windrider called Wave, not Wave, Rave, R-A-V-E, was designed by Sam Bradfield and built in the factory in Andy Zimmerman's kayak factory. And that was a really seminal achievement, because there was a boat that had 600 parts on the parts list, and they were able to sell it for $10,000.
Wow.
Because of the economy available in roto-molding the hulls. It was an honest-to-God polyethylene hydrofoiling sailboat. Had to have an aluminum frame inside in order to support the hydrofoils with at their correct alignment. But anyway, Mike McGarry gave the presentation at dinner, and it was really great. And Mike McGarry is the kind of a guy that can get a job in anybody's crew going anywhere. He's just a wonderful sailor. I put him in the same class with Randy Smythe. He's just one of these guys who has a feeling for a boat that normally leaves everyone else in the dust, you know.
Yeah.
just a very good sailor and an engineer. And he's also a marine biologist. That's his work. He's in charge of about 50 miles of beach south of Cape Canaveral on the east coast of Florida. But Mike came over and gave this presentation and talked about sailing with his friend, the owner of an Orma 60, one of those great big French trimarans that is foil stabilized or foil assisted. It doesn't actually fly all three hulls at once. It flies two hulls and leaves the downwind hull skimming the surface, but most of the weight of the vessel is on the foil that extends down from the downwind float. And Mike is now the crew on one of these boats. They sailed it across the Atlantic and up St. Lawrence, and it's now in the Great Lakes where it was campaigned last summer, and he had some great pictures of that. And he also had some great pictures of Sam Bradfield's last foiler, which was the 23-foot Osprey, which had the remarkable achievement of being able to what they call takeoff. The takeoff window in foiling is the crucial number. At what wind speed and what boat speed will the boat actually lift up out of the water and fly on the foils? And Osprey will do it with Mike aboard, with just Mike aboard. It'll do it at only 7 knots of speed. And that's a tremendous achievement. The big problem with foilers, of course, is that they tend to spend too much time not foiling in light airs.
Right.
And that relates to the rest of what I'd like to speak about here. Let's go back to that Windrider voyage. If any of our listeners, I'm sure we have listeners down under, have any information about this incredible voyage that was made in a Windrider 17 from New Zealand to Thailand, we need to know it. You know, hope you'll let us know what you know. Now, the impression that I came away from this past weekend of all of the fun we had in the Windriders. Incidentally, we had a lot of wind down there, Joe. For the second year in a row, we had 4 days of wind in excess of 15 knots, sometimes up to 25 with gusts of 30. And we started sailing. We usually go early. We started our sailing on Thursday, and there were several other boats there, but nobody came out except the Windriders. And then on Friday, Only the wind riders were there in the morning. In the afternoon, the wind let up a little bit, and so some other boats came out. But the wind riders have shown themselves to be very capable boats in a big, you know, in a blow.
Right.
And John Shepherd was there, who's Andy Zimmerman's former partner in the manufacture of wind riders. And he brought his daughter, 12-year-old daughter, and her daughter's friend, and sailed all around the place with in a Wind Rider 17 with these two girls, spray flying, everybody whooping and hollering, you know. It was really a wonderful demonstration for the Wind Riders, but it was not the Tasman Sea.
Right.
But here's the feeling I get, Andy. Andy and I are working on a pedal-powered vessel. I've become very interested in pedal power, and I think the future of pedal power, indeed the long-term future of sailing in general, small boat sailing in general, is going to involve a combination of pedal power and wind power. Now, it's being done already. You know, the Hobie, I think they call it the Mirage or the Treasure Island or something, they have a trimaran that has two pedal drives in it. It's a tandem for two people, and they also make a single, I think. But it's a pedal-powered vessel, but it also sails. It has a very simple, lightweight, and not very efficient sail, but it's a sail-assisted pedal-powered boat. Well, I think what's coming next, Joe, is going to be a pedal-assisted sailing vessel. And I think that sailing vessel is going to involve the hybrid wing. I've said a big mouthful there. For the last two or three podcasts, I've been talking about my recent friendship with Randy Smythe and Tommy Gonzalez, who are researching the potential of the hybrid wing sail, a rigid wing with that also carries some soft sail on the trailing edge of the wing. That combination, I think, can be brought down to the ordinary mortal level, particularly in a pedal-powered boat. I've got a hunch that if we could ever get seated in a boat with pedal power that also was a hot sailboat, whether it was a catamaran or a trimaran or anything, and Randy's rig, that is the hybrid wing rig, does require a very wide stance. That is, it would be a wide catamaran or trimaran. The rig has to spread out as far as possible from the masthead in order to let the upper end of the wing clear the rig as it rotates 360 degrees.
Right.
So it's a rig that speaks especially to the multi-hull configuration. And so what Andy Zimmerman and I are doing now, in partnership with a paddle sports manufacturer and several other guys who've been working on this project now for several years, what we're attempting to do is to develop a really good pedal-powered multi-hull. And that's been done before. There are pedal-powered multi-hulls, but we're trying to come up with something that's quite exceptional, but it does not sail. This version is not intended to sail. But I really think that, well, I'd like to say it first on Jim Brown's Outrigged Shaper Cast, that the real future of small boat sailing is going to involve pedal power and the hybrid wing sail.
Well, Jim, that's tremendous. We thank you so much for sharing with us here.
Okay.
This was a lot of news here back into this podcast, but we'll look forward to following up on some of these themes in future episodes.
Okay, thanks very much, Joe. I appreciate you taking this on the phone. I was supposed to be home yesterday, but my flight was canceled.
No problem. Well, we're happy to accommodate you, and we're looking forward to one of your regular caper casts coming up.
Oh, okay, maybe I'll just tell an old story next week, okay?
That's right. Okay. That's always great.
We want to use the phone.
Thank you,
Joe. Bye-bye. Thank you.